the reason these disturbances, they followed you to a new home, is because it's not the house that's haunted. It's your son.
So 1,100 men went in the war. 316 men come out. The Sharks took the rest June the 29th, 1945. Anyway, we delivered the bomb.
Never, ever, ever, under any circumstances, say, I'll be right back. Because you won't be back.
You get another beer, you want one?
Yeah, sure.
I'll be right back!
I have come here to chew bubblegum and kick ass. And I'm all out of bubblegum. Oh,
my name is Robert Hawkins. Approximately 7 hours ago, something attacked the city. You found this. If you're watching this, then you know more about it than I do.
California, stay away from me. Stay away from me. I'll come with you. John Doe has the upper hand.
And on that day, Ahab will go to his grave, but he'll rise again within the hour. He will rise and beckon that all save one shall follow.
They're all gonna laugh at you! They're all gonna laugh at you! They're all gonna laugh at you!
Hello! Welcome once again to Dark Discussion, your place for the discussion of horror film, fiction, and all that's fantastic. I am one of your co-hosts, Philip, from the state of New Hampshire in the U.S. of A., and with me in the state of Michigan.
This is Eric.
Eric, how are you, sir?
I'm here.
All right, very well. And in the state of New York.
Hi, this is Mike.
Mike, how are you?
I'm fine, Phil. How are you?
Doing all right. And a Connecticut American?
This is Chrissy.
Chrissy, how are you?
I am terrific, thank you.
Excellent. We usually have another co-host, and since people will be wondering where he is, he's actually Abe from Massachusetts, but he has a new job that he started about less than a month ago, and some of his hours are strange, and it depends on...
We will never hear from him again.
Yeah, so he's working... tonight. For those such as Pam who are curious when we are recording this, this is October 29th, 2019, 2 days before Halloween, 7:37 Eastern Standard Time. That's when we started. Let's see what else. We do have some interesting news that we'll talk about at the end of this episode during our what we've been seeing or whatever. Also, Chrissy has an email from Abe. Abe has a bunch of stuff that he wanted to notify.
Abe's not on the show anymore. He sends in listener email.
Yeah. So he sent a listener email to give some information for listeners to the show. And then there was
any of it about the topic for tonight?
I don't know.
Is it just about some anime shit or something?
Yeah, some of it's about anime shit.
Yeah, it's video games, animes, movies, books, things like that. Also, there were two big announcements today in entertainment news, and so we'll mention those at the end of the episode as well. And that's pretty much it. So for folks who don't know who we are or first-time listeners or whatnot, we are Dark Discussions Podcast, where we talk and critique a genre film weekly, or usually a genre film, but genre films such as horror, sci-fi, fantasy, thrillers, techno thrillers, mysteries, grindhouse, arthouse, cult films, drive-in films, and midnight movies. We basically try to talk intelligently about a genre that deserves intelligence. We do have an email at darkdiscussions@aol.com where you can email us and give us your feedback, your requests, your reviews of just obscure films that you saw or wide release films that you saw and you wanted to just give your thoughts. We will read those emails on the podcast. You can also do voicemail too. Just basically attach a MP3 or WAV file to your email. Eric, we do have a website.
Yes, we do have a website. It can be found at www.darkdiscussions.com. You can find many things on this website. On the front page, on the right-hand side, are links to Friends of the Podcast. Up at the top, there are links to different sections. One is the articles section, where you can find articles written by myself as well as others. Another section is the audio section, where you can find every single episode of this podcast, as well as any of the spinoffs, available for free. So go check that out. There's bound to be something you want to catch up with. And then front and center on the front page of the site is a link to our Patreon account. Patreon allows you to financially contribute to your online artists like us. Producing this show is not free. We have to pay for things like server hosting and when Phil's computer blows up. So if you'd like to help offset the cost of producing this show, you can go to patreon.com/darkdiscussions or follow the link on our front page. For every $5 a month you care to donate, you'll have the opportunity to submit a topic for us to possibly cover on the show. We take all the submissions from our patrons and draw from them randomly on a quarterly basis. For more information, you can go to patreon.com/darkdiscussions or follow the link on the front page at darkdiscussions.com.
Excellent. Thank you, Eric. And yes, I would like to thank all the Patreon supporters. For example, the website and URL and so forth are all paid up for the next 3 years, which cost close to $500 or so. And this site's been up for 11 years, so that's been over almost $2,000 that has been plugged into the website, including software to create the website, as well as a need to replace a computer due to a massive crash actually during the recording of one of our episodes. So your help has been greatly appreciated for all you that do participate. And of course, we try to give back as much as we can by giving weekly episodes, as well as simply allowing you folks to choose a topic that we will randomly pick, as Eric mentioned, every quarter. And I believe we're going to be doing our latest pick next week, a film called Calibre from Scotland.
Calibre.
Calibre, it's spelled because of the English way Calibre is spelled. So that one is an upcoming episode that we are going to record. So look out for that. All right, I think that's it. Anything else of note that is more important than what we've been watching that folks wanted to, or the news that people wanted to bring up, or are we ready to go? Anything?
Well, let's get into our topic, and we can do other stuff later.
All right, so with that all stated, Eric, why don't you let everybody know what we're going to discuss tonight?
Tonight, we are going to be talking about Robert Eggers' latest effort as a director, currently in theaters, starring Willem Dafoe and Robert Pattinson, The Lighthouse.
What's a timberman want with being a wiki?
Just looking to earn a living, just like any man. Starting new.
On the run. Keeping secrets, are you?
No, sir.
Why, just spill your beans. Weeks, 2 days, help me to recollect.
That's right, Robert Eggers, probably best known for The Witch.
She's a witch!
That's right. Highly acclaimed film with Black Phillip. Folks who don't know what that means, see the film. This
Click
is his follow up. That's right. His follow up sophomore effort. Eggers is a director from New Hampshire, grew up and has family, I believe, still in Lee, New Hampshire, which is not too far from the coast. This film, as Eric mentioned, stars two important genre actors that they've done many things. Willem Dafoe, everybody knows who he is, and everybody knows who Robert Pattinson is. Robert Pattinson's career is about to skyrocket after his early debut in the Twilight series, and Willem Dafoe.
He's about to skyrocket.
Well,
I'm pretty sure those Twilight movies made him pretty fucking rich.
Yeah, but this is the double up on his superstardom because he's about to play Batman. And then
that did wonders for Jared Leto as the Joker.
I think he got that role because of his Academy Award, Jared Leto.
But yeah. All in the execution.
Indeed. It's all in execution. And Pattinson, based off of what he's done the last 6 years in indie film, he's looking pretty damn good. Willem Dafoe. What's that, Mayor?
You will get sparkly Batman.
Yes. I guess you will. Even though that was a role he played, that is not him. Willem Dafoe, everybody knows who he is.
My goodness, Phil has a crush on Robert Pattinson.
I defend Robert Pattinson.
It's been growing for a while, if you haven't noticed.
Yeah, I've seen a number of his recent films, and he's awesome. He really is a damn good actor, so I'm a big fan.
There's a lot of unfortunate people out there who like to blame bad movies on actors that have really nothing to do other than read the bad script that was written for them.
That's fair enough.
Yeah. And I'm one of the few people who've probably seen some of his recent films that are low budget or hidden, or even art house, like his work with Cronenberg, for that matter. And yeah, he's a rock star as an actor. And as is Willem Dafoe. Let's see what else I got. Mark Corvin did the music, cinematography. Jaron Blaschke edited by Louise Ford. That's all I know. It says it's distributed by A24 in the United States. So I assume that's true. I didn't even notice that at the beginning of the film.
Oh yeah, it was there.
It was okay. No budget has been given. Box office at the time is $3.9 million, and it was released wide release on October 18th of 2019, but it did play at Cannes on May 19th, 2019. And that's pretty much all I got. So I guess we can go around and discuss how we heard about this film and what we thought about it. So, Chrissy, why don't you start?
Yeah, my overall impression of this film, I'm just going to try to be like succinct. I thought watching Willem Dafoe was awesome. He is a master at his craft. I loved the atmosphere, and I thought the cinematography was great and the mood. I loved all of the allusions to things like Rime of the Ancient Mariner and Moby Dick.
Oh, Chrissy, yeah. A good one. The symbolism of what birds symbolize.
And I am definitely going to talk about that because there's actually a real life thing that happened in relation to that, which I would like to talk about, but we'll get there. One of the things that was a plus of this film for me was that it dealt very heavily in themes and allusions to the work of Poe and Lovecraft. And I could see what the director's intent might have been. I almost felt like this was Eggers' love letter to specifically Poe and Lovecraft. The bad news about that, though, and I did put this on my Facebook, is that I really felt like if you aren't familiar with Poe or Lovecraft and the themes of their work and the, you know, things about madness, things about knowledge you shouldn't know, certain conventions, because, you know, of horror stories, because you're not a horror reader in general who understands how the genre works, I think you're going to have problems understanding the storytelling in this. You know, I was surrounded by, quote, average Joes in my theater, which was actually pretty packed. And most of the people around me were asking each other what was going on. And it was pretty clear that they had probably never read horror. Afterward, one lady said that, well, I only came because she read the review in some magazine that clearly wasn't horror related. It was like, I don't know, ladies' book or something, who knows. But she was completely confused and disappointed. Now, that said, although I understood and appreciated this movie, I had some problems with it. I didn't like its repetitiveness. I think the story could have been told in 45 minutes as like a longer short film, and I feel that it would have been more effective. I felt there was a severe lack of tension, which is kind of unusual for this kind of story. I know another one of my friends saw this film and was kind of like, it couldn't decide if it was supernatural or not. And that's just it. I mean, it's fine to decide that you want your film or your book or whatever to wonder if what was going on was supernatural or all in the characters' heads. And Poe is definitely a master at that. But if you're going to do that, you need to make it so that your reader or viewer is able to confidently lean one way or the other after reading the story or seeing the film. And this film didn't do that. Instead, it leaves the viewer with a feeling of, was this filmmaker trying to make a supernatural movie that failed? Or are we just supposed to think these guys went crazy? You know, it's more confusion. It's not, ooh, I'm making a choice because of this, this, and this that was presented to me. It's more like, what is this? And that's really not, like I said, that's not a good feeling to leave your viewers or your readers with. But I think this film faced very similar issues as Escape from Tomorrow. The movie about, remember, that was the movie about the guy who was going crazy in Disney parks.
Oh, yeah. I remember.
Yeah. And it was the same problem. It was like, you weren't sure what, like, was this supernatural? Was it in his head? But it was, that was not in a good way. That, you know, it was more like, this film doesn't know what it wants to be. It was not a comfortable. And there were also a couple of things in here that just didn't make any sense. I mean, I was just like, what is going on here? So, yeah, so that's my thoughts on it. I mean, overall, I'm going to go with, I really appreciated this film and I understood it, but I'm not going to say I loved it. I definitely had some issues with it. So.
All right. Very good. All right, Mike, what about you?
Yeah. So, I think, yeah, I just got out of seeing this. I went to go see it last night and I don't know if I misread the time, if the time was wrong on the app or what it was. But by the time I got to the theater, they were already into the film by about 10 or 15 minutes. So something was
anything.
Well, I didn't know that at the time. So I went to go see, Rocky Horror Picture Show instead, which, you know, not a bad alternative. And I went back to see it today, caught it on time this time. I just got back. So I haven't had a whole lot of time to digest my feelings and my thoughts about the film. But I actually do think that Willem Dafoe's character summed it up really well in the movie when he said, I believe what he said was, and I think that kind of sums up my feeling. You know, there's a lot of craftsmanship here. There's a lot of, you know, cinematography and acting that are fine, but, and different people have different theories on what film should be. For me, it's a story. It's still a storytelling medium first and foremost, just storytelling with images. And I didn't find the story as told to be particularly compelling. I get what they're doing. I've seen stories about people who are crazy before and descents into madness, but this was one of the more boring descents into madness I've ever watched. It has a really good. It has a really good shot at the end. That's creepy, but that could have been a 30-second entry into the ABCs of horror, and I would have been fine with it. You know, I really like The Witch. I think Robert Eggers should continue chasing his muse. I just think this ended up being a misfire here for me.
All right, very well. Yeah, for me, I heard about this film. I think I just saw the trailer and it just popped up and it said the director of The Witch, and that's how I heard about it, in front of some other film a couple of months ago. And fortunately the trailer doesn't say much, so it didn't ruin whatever experience I was going to have to see the film. I saw it Sunday night. That was the only time I could see it. Otherwise, I was going to have to bail on the podcast, so I had to go Sunday night. And It's about 20 miles away, Methuen, Massachusetts. Sorry, to AMC. I could have gone to another one called in Burlington, Massachusetts, which is about the same distance, but Methuen's a little better. And it was actually fairly packed for not only an art house film, but for a Sunday night. So that was kind of surprising. So I went in completely blind, not knowing too much. And first off, I'll have to give Chrissy 100% credit on her comparison of this film with, I guess, not to stomp on the name continuously, but Poe and, in this case, Lovecraft as well.
Take a drink.
Sure, absolutely. Because both Poe and Lovecraft and the descent into madness of the characters in their stories are fully realized in this film here. The film is absolutely fantastically acted. It's absolutely incredible, the performances by the two leads. The cinematography is really good. Yarmouth, Nova Scotia, filled in quite well for what was supposed to be an island off of New Hampshire. And the black and white really made the film work for what it was supposed to look like. And the foghorn or that the lighthouse let out is one of the creepiest sounds ever. And I just love that. And so the atmosphere right off the bat really hit it out of the ballpark. But then we get into the film. And unfortunately, for I think most of us, even though it's an incredibly well-made and acted film, the problem with the film, as Chrissy and Mike said, it may have been because of the length. But I think the real problem with the film is what Mike actually said earlier, which is we've seen stories of people going mad many times, and so what? So it's like, what's the big deal? So yeah, as a sophomore effort, Eggers' film, is not as good as, Astor's sophomore effort of Midsommar, in my opinion. However, it is a great film, but not necessarily, a film for everybody. Chrissy summed it up perfectly, where the folks that she saw it with were like, going in probably for maybe as a horror film or a thriller, and it just was a film about basically character studies of people going mad. Mixed bag probably for most, even if it is considered a great film. And I would even say it's a great film, even and if that may not even make sense. So let's go with you, Eric.
I'm going to be probably closer to Mike. I will agree that there's a great deal of skill involved with the making of this film. The acting is fantastic. I found the combination of the sound design and the cinematography pretty interesting. It's an almost square frame, which is not something you see in the theaters that often anymore. With this massive sound design, as Phil was talking about the foghorn, and you hear waves crashing and wind blowing, and it's all quite immersive. Even though the square frame feels kind of cramped, I found that juxtaposition to be kind of interesting. As I said, the acting's great. All that being said, this movie was just boring as shit. I was really having trouble staying awake through most of the movie, and then when it got interesting, the interesting part was confusing. And the whole thing made the story for me very unsatisfactory. I had to read 3 articles after I got done watching the movie to understand what I had seen. And while I totally get where Chrissy has an appreciation for the literary references, I do not think you should have to have a degree in literature to watch a movie. I think it should stand on its own. I don't think this does. I think it's a good piece of art, not as successful as entertainment. So I appreciate the skill with which the movie was made, but I did not enjoy the experience of watching it myself.
Right. Okay. So yeah, I'm glad you brought that up about the square box of the film, because I was looking at it saying, is something wrong with the projector, or is the film actually made that way?
And well, this is, I think, going back to the days of yore, right? The old Universal films, and you know when that was the frame, right? Before,
right?
Before you got to the widescreen, and they were competing with TV and giving you bigger and better vistas. You know, this is the guy who made made the Witch by candlelight, because other than the presence of microphones and cameras, he, you know, wanted to be as, you know, as immersive in that era as possible. And so he's clearly going for a throwback feel to this. I don't, you know, and I was surprised, you know, it didn't really change anything for me in terms of how I viewed the film. It makes it kind of more claustrophobic, and I think that works for that story. You know, but I don't know, I think, so as far as Chrissy's audience, I think this falls into the art house horror category, if you want to call it horror, and or what some call elevated horror, and I know that makes Chrissy's eyes roll.
Oh my God, big time.
I think all of our eyes roll.
Yeah, but you can take any of these movies like this that I've seen in theaters in the last couple of years, The Witch, It Follows, Hereditary, Midsummer, every single time. Somebody at the time the movie is over stands up and says, "That was the stupidest thing I ever saw." So they have a very particular type of taste. I think it was Jason Lloyd tried ranking his elevated horror directors, and he included Mike Flanagan and Jordan Peele. I was like, no, not the same, because I've never been in the theater and somebody stood up and said, "That was the dumbest thing I ever saw." I don't care how art house horror Absentia may seem, because that was his first low budget film. Nothing else really fits in that category.
Anyhow,
so I understand people not getting it, not liking it. I like those films. I appreciated those films. I know Poe. I know Lovecraft. I may not know them as well as many people, but I know them. I can read them. I can enjoy them. You know, I did not enjoy this particular story. So whatever he was actually going for, I think it fell out of his grasp. I do think a shorter story would have helped. I don't know if there was a full 90-minute story here, because there was a lot of not much happened.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And I did want to clarify one thing in reference to what Eric said about, and you brought it up too, Mike, about Poe and Lovecraft. You know, it wasn't just the literary allusions. It was that, you know, I really felt that you would have to have a pretty good working knowledge of almost the entire Poe canon, and at least have some kind of working knowledge of Lovecraft and what Lovecraft's story structures are like in order to understand this. And in that way, I kind of agree with Eric, in that you should not have to have a literature degree to understand what the hell is going on in this story. And that, you know, because I had no problem. I knew exactly what was going on. But when I came home and like thought about it, I was like, well, that's just because look at all the stuff I've read that's Poe and Lovecraft. This just made complete sense to me. But you put an audience member in there who's never read a freaking Poe story in their lives, except for maybe The Cask of Amontillado when they were, you know, 12 in middle school or whatever. They're not going to have any clue. And I think this is almost a case where, you know, I hate to go down that MFA critical route, but I'm going to do it again anyway, because I do have my MFA, so I'm not going to be offended by it if I say it, because it's true. You know, you can make pretty shit. Make all the pretty shit you want. But if there's a story there that is not accessible or that does not make sense, then essentially you might as well have just written a bunch of shit that didn't make any sense and put it on the screen anyway, without any art behind it, because you're not making your point. And I truly think that in this case, this was self-indulgent on the part of Eggers. It was clear to me that he wanted to just make this really complicated, amazing, like deep thing that was his love letter to Poe and Lovecraft and Rime of the Ancient Mariner and Moby Dick. But he really was not interested in making sure the story was clear enough that your average audience member can get it. And that's okay. I'm not saying that's bad. Just then don't throw it out to the world and go, hey, this is like, it's going to be like The Witch, because clearly it's not. Like,
well,
you know.
And to be fair, I don't think Eggers did that. I think the marketing team at A24 did that. I'm sure if you asked Robert Eggers if this movie is like The Witch, he'd probably say it wasn't. At least I hope so.
And I don't think, I'm sorry, I don't think this is that deep a story. At this point, it's not novel. It's not original. Oh, and you know they're descended to madness, and a lot of it's very it's kind of cliched enough that it wasn't hard to see where it was going to be going. In terms of the relationship between the two guys.
Yeah.
So it's like deep and interesting from a high school writer's perspective. I don't find it deep and interesting in terms of did it brought it. I don't think it brought anything new or original to the table.
Oh no, I agree.
Shall we throw up a spoiler?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah.
Well. Before
shall we throw up a spoiler flag so we can talk about details?
Well, we got to do a wiki. We got to do a wiki.
A wiki. And a wiki. I would like to mention. That this week, since as we learned in this movie, the slang term for a lighthouse keeper is a wiki. We literally have a wiki. Wiki, wiki. All right. So.
Well played.
IMDb says about this movie, the hypnotic and hallucinatory tale of two lighthouse keepers on a remote and mysterious New England island in the 1890s. That's it.
Yeah, and can I just reference something that Mike was finishing up saying? Mike, I don't mean to imply that this film is deep and interesting. What I meant was just that it's, if you've never read, you know, all of us here on this podcast have seen, like you said, Mike, all the cliches are in this movie. This movie has all the conventions of horror. But I really just feel that if you have no experience with horror in your life and you go see this thing, that's what I'm talking about, that you're not going to understand it. Because, yeah, we could look at it and go, oh, it's a remote island convention. Two people going mad, you know, cliche. Oh, descent into madness. Oh, a hallucination, or is that supernatural? We know all this shit, but most people don't.
The mermaid, you know, all that stuff.
Yeah, but like most people, but like I said, my audience was kind of weird. First of all, there wasn't anybody in my audience that was under the age of like, I don't know, 45 at least. It was a much older crowd. A lot of them were at least 20 years my senior. And I could tell that they were going there not thinking that they were going to – I don't think they really – I think they thought that it was something else entirely. Because the comments I was – and through the whole movie, I kept hearing them talk to each other like, what's going on there? What just happened?
Plus,
what's
there was
that?
This- There's yeah, this like the, drunk lady that kept on yelling, Poe-esque!
Yeah.
Well, in fairness, I've heard that in a Spider-Man movie. So,
yeah, that's true.
Audiences are audiences are audiences. You know, and I know I've told some of those stories on the podcast before. If this was, look, you can take a movie like It Follows or The Witch Midsummer, and there are people who will get those films that won't like those films, just like, you know, you can get Fast and Furious and still not like it.
But great analogy, Mike. Great
family.
Analogy.
Right. But just because, you know, so just because you get it, it's like, but there are people who don't like those films because they really do go over their heads.
They're ridiculous.
Well, Mike, and that's you're saying those films, and yet even with those films, some people will like Midsommar, but won't like this film either. So it's not like
right. Well, that's what I'm saying. That's what I said is that you can get a film and not like it, but there's some people who just don't like a film because they don't get it. And to be fair, I know someone who didn't get the whole Twinkie thing in Zombieland. So it doesn't have to be a deep film.
Sure.
you know, sometimes things can be spelled out for you and you still miss the point. So in this case, I don't think it's, I don't know about the people who didn't get, anyone who doesn't get it is not going to like it. But you have four people here who I think got it
and didn't like it
and didn't particularly care for it. So, and look, there is sometimes a sophomore slump, you know, where your second effort is not as good as your first. I thought that was the case with Jordan Peele and Us. I thought it was an okay movie. I don't think it was nearly as good as Get Out.
Well, and here's the thing is I would never say that Robert Eggers shouldn't have made this movie. Because it wasn't for me. There's probably some people out there loving it. He's probably
critics
really happy that he was, critics are in love with it. He's probably very happy that he got to accomplish the vision that he had in his head. And so I would never say that he shouldn't have made it. I'm just going to say that I'd prefer to watch something else.
Sure. And you got to give him credit too. He, got two, fairly big leading men, you know, compared to his first effort, which was a somewhat of a hit. And that just had, you know, supporting actors from Game of Thrones as the stars and a girl that, that, you know, was a nobody at the time. So
at the time, yes.
Yeah. So, and she's still, not a huge name, but
she's a known name at this point,
at least in some genre circle. Sure. I mean, you know, this film had, obviously a bigger, well, I don't know if it had a bigger budget, but it definitely had a more apt for him to do his vision because, yeah, he got to do black and white, which is usually bad for cinema nowadays, as you know, subtitles would be in some cases. He was able to do the old-looking screen, as you brought up, Eric, where it's a box instead of a, you know, cinescope, I guess. Oh, go on, Eric, yeah.
No, I was just going to say, I also believe he went out of his way to acquire some actually old filmmaking cameras and put filters on the picture as well to make it the shots that weren't with an old camera, make them look like they were an old camera. So he put a significant amount of effort into making it look like an old movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, it makes sense because in The Witch, right, you know, they built buildings that hadn't been built since, you know, the 1600s. Yeah. So he's really into that. And whoever sponsors his films, meaning the venture capitalists, they obviously have faith in him even after his first film, which he was a no name at that point, and then this film for sure. And as I stated, this film is getting better reviews than The Witch by critics by about 5% and played at Cannes.
And I also think too that one of the interesting things here is again, you definitely see Eggers' amazing love and passion for historical accuracy to the point of where no man has gone before. Like the way, like if you go to the Lighthouse Museum down in Staten Island, you can see that this really was how these lighthouse keepers lived. And like things like the cistern and things like the Lighthouse Association stamp that was on everything. It was called the, hold on. I wrote it down because I can never remember it because it's like a huge name. But they had it on all of their clothes, you know, on anything that was the property. Basically, lighthouses were really important in the building of this country economically. And in the film, it's stuff like we see them switching off. Like, okay, the new people are coming to the island and they're going to come there for a month and then they're going to switch out at the end of the month. This was kind of a common thing. And there was an organization, which this is what I was talking about, his historical accuracy. It was called the U.S. Lighthouse Establishment. And they had the U.S. Lighthouse Establishment, like, logo on, like, everything that it would have been on. Like, their aprons and things like that. And so, I mean, like I said, he's gone where no man has gone before in terms of that. Just really paying attention to that. He didn't have to go that crazy, like, recreating the logos. That was the detail that honestly really didn't need to be there. He right. just put it there for accuracy reasons.
Yeah,
well, and that seems to be the way he rolls. He's if he's going to do a historical piece, he's going to do it right.
Yeah, and that's nice. That's all well and good, but there's a lot of it.
But it's not necessarily entertaining.
That's not necessarily entertaining.
And it's not even really important when you really think about it, because I've right, seen a lot of great period piece films that didn't have that amount of accuracy or detail, and they were better than this film. But go
no, but ahead. I appreciate that he makes that effort, and we all, four of us, are at the very least minor league experts in one particular field or another, and we have all seen films that fuck that up and been kind of irritated at how they fuck up basic facts.
Cutting Asparagus.
Yeah.
Exactly,
Phil.
Jackass, Phil.
Except actual people, real people can cut asparagus, you know. It's not quite the same thing.
But it fucked it up, though, Mike. That's the point. You said
no,
it fucked
no,
it up.
No, it's historically accurate. People have cut asparagus.
Asparagus up, right. This wasn't a culinary chef you were talking about.
Fair.
Right, but... Yeah, so doing something like that to make sure everybody is satisfied, like if someone goes in to really, you know, nail that, I can appreciate that. But there's this, you know, but you compare this to like Cold Skin that we
last year.
That was a
similar concept.
Good.
At the very basic level, two men in a lighthouse. Are they nuts or not? We didn't have to get inundated with the cistern and the technical details.
Right.
And some of it felt like I was getting a little, and I've been to lighthouses. I actually love the imagery of the lighthouse, of the lantern, the glass mm-hmm. up in the top that we see at the end. I've just always found that a really fascinating image.
Really cool. Yeah.
A really cool image. And I think there's a good story that could be told in a lighthouse, or actually was last year with Cold Skin, or The Fog. You know, he gets so into the weeds, and that's not necessarily a horrible thing, but doesn't build out of the weeds. You know, so the weeds mm-hmm. isn't set dressing. The weeds is the story. And he has everybody, and especially has Willem Dafoe speaking, and it can only be called the shanty accent, you know, that only people who wear sailor caps can ever speak, you know.
So, speaking of accents, sorry to cut you off, Mike.
But I was going to say, but it made it hard sometimes to understand what was being said. At least for me.
Speaking of accents, there was one part in this movie that probably is, I'm the only person that actually laughed out loud at this. And it's only because of my relationship with Phil. And the fact that he has a thick accent, and I'm always trolling him on Facebook with posts about poop. Because he doesn't like things about poops and farts. So at the end of the movie, when Robert Pattinson is telling the other guy how bad he smells, and he starts yelling, "The farts! Oh, God, the farts!" I was laughing my ass off. I was like, "It's Phil! It's Phil!"
But to go back to what Mike was saying, Mike, I have to agree. I mean, that's the reason why I didn't really like The Witch that much. It was like, I don't give a rat's ass about the authenticity of the accents and the archaic words. It was like more distracting.
I thought that was way more of a story than this was.
Yes, I would agree. My problem with this was story.
And there's a lot of people who said they liked The Witch a lot better when they could go home and watch it with the subtitles on.
Yes. Agreed. I'm one of those people. Yes, absolutely.
Me too.
Yep.
But there was a story there. And that's the difference. Here, it's
a character study.
Watch a couple of guys fart around, literally, in fart around! For, you know, I would say a good hour and 15 minutes minimum. Before you get to anything that's even remotely compelling.
Well, the seagull part, right? Wasn't that in the first hour and 15 minutes when
he has a standoff with the seagull? Okay, I was interested in that. Here's the problem. You have Willem Dafoe and Robert Pattinson, and I'm more interested in the fucking seagull.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, to me, that was the most fascinating part of the film. They were the only real threat. Like, that was the other problem. I'm like, where is the threat here? Like, I didn't feel like these guys were threatened at all. I didn't feel like, you know, the tension was just not there. It was like, you know, I never at any point was like, uh-oh, except for when the guy threw a rock at the bird and I was like, oh, you're fucked now, because that's bad luck. But to me, that's so obvious. Like, that's in the Rime of the Ancient Mariner. Like, that's a very common thing. And not only it's...
Well, and Chrissy, if it wasn't even supernatural, it's just superstition, as Patterson said. It meant nothing, right?
Right. What it is it's a sailor's superstition that you shouldn't kill. And I honestly believe, I think it's an albatross. I don't think it's...
Albatross! Well, they didn't say seagull in the film. They just said
a seabird.
Yeah, so that could include albatrosses.
Right, but in the Rime of the Ancient Mariner, the supposed reason, which is a poem by Samuel Taylor Coleridge, for those listeners who don't know, it was written in 1798. It's a lyrical poem.
I should have known all this. Why didn't I know this? Because, you know what? Like you said, Chrissy, or I should say Eric, if you're not a literary person, you won't understand any of the references in this. But continue.
Right. But anyway, so I did, well, that's kind of why I just made a couple notes so I could share it with everybody, because
I
understand that not everybody's going to know this. So anyway, Rime of the Ancient Mariner.
Gist of the Rime of the Ancient Mariner, you can watch the music video from Iron Maiden. They did a song called Rime of the Ancient Mariner.
Yeah, and you'll get the idea of the story from that. But anyway, the whole thing kind of starts where I'm just going to get right to the chase. Basically, these sailors on a ship are doomed because they kill an albatross, or their captain kills an albatross early on in the poem.
I have a question for you. So is this poem similar to The Raven or Beowulf, where it's like a really long, it's almost like a novella?
Yes. Gotcha. Yeah, it's closer to Beowulf because it's got like all these different parts, but
you can find it
for free online.
Yeah, now I know of the poem. I had forgotten what it's about, and now that you mention it, I'm pretty sure the thing with the albatross, I'm pretty sure I did read it in high school or college and just more or less forgot it. It's not
it was regularly taught in freshman English.
All right, but it's
like
not
it used to be.
It's not hard for someone to pick up on this because he tells him you can't kill a seabird. It's bad luck. So
well,
even
and
then,
I do...
as a metaphor, or as a, not a metaphor, as an not allusion, rather, as an allusion, it's kind of a failed allusion when you have to come right and say, hey, it's bad luck. They're not relying on you to have that previous knowledge.
Right.
He left out, though, the reason. And the reason it's bad luck is because it's supposed to be the seabirds are reincarnated souls of lost sailors.
No, yeah. They said that.
Yeah, they said
they
that.
Did say
oh,
that.
They did say that. Okay, I missed it then.
Yeah, my thing that I wanted to say that was kind of interesting is that in real life, there was the Franklin Expedition, which some of our listeners might know about because AMC, the first season of The Terror, was about that expedition. And all of those men disappeared, right? They were looking for the Northwest Passage, and they basically sailed up into the Arctic and vanished. And for years, this mystery was never solved. What happened to them? What makes this kind of cool is that in real life, the last sighting of the Terror and the Erebus by human eyes is described in a couple of different accounts, and they basically say, we saw sailors on the ships killing albatrosses, like shooting them, like for fun. And then this whole expedition disappears. So, like, I don't know. I just think that that's like a real life thing that really happened. And there's a moment, Mike, that you were referencing when the captain is freaking out about killing a seabird, and he's so intense about it. And he was overly intense about it. And so that made me wonder if he had killed one once and then it had resulted in something bad in his life. But then later on in the film, you know, when he does that whole prayer curse to Poseidon thing or Neptune, I guess it could be construed as a moment of support toward the idea that the captain himself is supernatural or has supernatural powers. Because he's like, don't kill the seabird, right? And then there's a vision of Winslow, the younger guy, sees him in his head as Poseidon. But that gets into the whole idea that this movie didn't do a great job of deciding whether or not that was really supernatural, or he was just freaking out and that was trying to give us his backstory, or if that was just in there because, I don't know, it was the interpretation.
That's a good
point. You know what I mean?
Chrissy, I had no idea that that was supposed to be Neptune, Poseidon, or whatever. It went over my head, I guess, at that point.
Well, I had trouble.
Well, and that's what I was talking about when I said I had to read three articles to understand what I just watched.
Oh, see,
there's Greek mythology going on heavily in this too. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's why I totally agree with Eric's assessment that you should not have to have a literary degree to understand what the hell is going on in here. Like, I kind of was like, oh, I get that. And, you know, I've read The Rime of the Ancient Mariner like a million times. Like, I know exactly what's going on. And the seagull, they kind of blew too, though, because it wasn't really they had the potential to make it a really creepy three-beat had they spaced it properly. But A, they didn't space it properly, so that was a tension problem there. You know, first he throws the rock at the gull, but then like two scenes later, it's tapping on the window. And then the third beat is when the gull starts tearing at his clothes. But then we see the seagull two or three more times, and then finally his guts are being eaten out at the end. And it was just like, all right, that didn't work. Like, that was total waste. Like, they could have done something really cool with that. Instead of just shoving it in everywhere, they got a chance because it really watered down the impact or the importance.
I think it doesn't help that seagulls are really, and maybe it's just my familiarity with them, they're not creepy birds.
No, they're not.
They're not annoying birds. They might be a little annoying, and you know.
I agree usually, Mike, but every time they showed the seagulls in the background, it reminded me of the movie The Birds. Because they were like flocking over him.
Me too.
So it worked for me. All right, but I just didn't get an ominous thing from them. I thought the scene where he's having the showdown with the obstinate seagull at the beginning of the film was more funny than it was anything else. Same thing with the bird tapping at the window. The audience laughed. Picking at his clothes was, you know, the audience laughed. It's not, you know, an ominous thing. Although, you know, I think of what was the name of that movie by the Coen brothers with George Clooney and John Goodman and John Turturro in the Deep South?
Oh, Brother, Where Art Thou?
Yeah. Right. Now, that is a film that they say was their spin on the Odyssey. Now, I know Greek mythology. I know the Odyssey. You know, so John Goodman was a Cyclops, and there's little touches of it here and there. Didn't have to know shit about the Odyssey to watch that movie and enjoy it.
Exactly. Exactly. And that's exactly, I think, what Eric was pointing out and definitely what I'm saying, too. It should not be that I was probably the only person in my audience that knew what the fuck was going on. And it was only because I have such a vast background in the few things he was referencing. Mm-hmm. I'm no freaking expert on everything. I get that. I have what I would consider to be a working knowledge. Okay, I'm not an expert. I'm not a super geek. Believe me, I know academics that would have eaten this movie for breakfast with every single Poe reference and every single Lovecraft reference from every story, and they could tell you where it came from and which line. That's not me. But the fact that I had to have a working knowledge, and I know more than most people. That's just not right. Like you're totally like excluding your audience. You know, it's just not
right. Well, yeah, right. I mean, I immediately saw the Lovecraft stuff with you know the octopus, the Cthulhu.
Well, of course, because he always has an octopus at the end of every fucking story.
Yeah, especially
near on an island and all this other stuff, because I mean that's where we first see Cthulhu in the Call of Cthulhu, and then of course with the Shadow of Innsmouth and the Dagon and all that crap, and then of course the Poes stuff along with Lovecraft, since we're going with Lovecraft, the main character begins to go insane throughout,
yep,
until the very end, where they both are kooks, and that's the end of them. So
well, and the guy at the end too, he also gets the knowledge that isn't known, and even which is a Lovecraft thing, and even the light of the lighthouse itself was kind of like very Lovecraftian, the way it was sort of, yes, I know that is what lighthouse bulbs really look like. Or at least at that time in history, they looked like that, but it was still very Lovecraftian. I feel like he shot that a certain way just to show off. Like, it was like, look, it's a Lovecraft.
Oh, I have no doubt. Yeah.
You know, I mean, so that it would be really obvious, because it almost looked like one of those Lovecraftian pod type things from another world or whatever that they always talk about.
That's the great old one or whatever.
Yeah, the great old one, totally. But I just think the seagull thing was wasted. And, you know, even that scene where he brutally starts killing it, to be honest with you, I was laughing when that was going on. And I'm like, I should not be laughing at this. This movie's built wrong. Like, this should be the point where we see this guy fucking snap in half, and we should be like, oh my God, I'm oh no. You know, instead I'm laughing going, why'd you kill that seagull? There was nothing wrong with it. You know,
well,
you know, it's like, I shouldn't have been thinking that at that point.
Well, and that's I think a far of the picture is we when he spills the beans, as Defoe's character says.
Oh yeah.
Because
yeah,
at that moment, when he says all that, we find out that all along he isn't the person he's supposed to be. And he was probably insane even before he went on the island, which obviously makes him more apt to go insane when he gets to the island. But Patterson's character at the beginning, the first hour of the film, appears to just be a guy, a decent fellow who just has to suck it up because he has to work with this bully for 4 weeks. And then we find out all along that he most likely murdered someone and has been haunting him since he did the murder. Back when he used to work on the Hudson Bay up in Canada and in Quebec or Ontario. So it makes you suddenly look at the character completely different than earlier. So it was a cool reveal, but it also kind of ruined my perspective of the Patterson character, because earlier I thought he was just going insane because he was being bullied and, you know, being locked on the island even after the boat never showed up and all this other stuff. And in reality, he was just a bad/crazy person in the first place.
Well, and again, talking about supernatural versus madness, there's that whole argument they have about the stain, right? And the captain, the Willem Dafoe character, is yelling at him about, you didn't swab these floors, there's a stain, da 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 da. And the other guy's like, I swabbed these floors, I don't see that stain. Okay, was that supposed to be supernatural, or that like one of them was seeing it and the other one wasn't? Or was that madness? But then you see Dafoe obviously be insanely abusive. That's what I'm talking about, where this movie doesn't know what it wanted.
Because it
should have been made clear.
It also showed that Dafoe was insane too, in a sense, because certain things, like I remember the movie Schindler's List, when the kid was forced to clean the bathtub, and he cleans it to the point where, you know, it looks clean, but you know, if you really put your fingers into it, you're still going to pull up dandruff or whatever you don't pull up, and he gets shot from the Nazi in that film. And it kind of was like Dafoe was being not a Nazi, but obviously insane, where it's like, the stain's there. And it's like, you can clean it all you want, but, and it's clean, but he's just like OCD'd out and he's just insane.
A part of it was just that his character is a bully and he enjoys being a bully.
Right, yeah.
I thought that was just an aspect of his personality, whether he was crazy or not.
And he's asserting his authority, because this is relatively early, I think, into the story, right?
Yeah.
So he's asserting his authority over his underling, but he can, you know, whether it's bully-esque or what have you.
bully-esque.
I think we should just put esque on the end of everything.
Or is it just like him testing and pushing like Arlie Ermey in Full Metal Jacket? And we know how well that ended up. Yeah, whatever. You know, is it just, you know, hassling the new guy and making sure he's in his spot and respecting the chain of authority? You know, I said, you know what?
I would agree with that if this wasn't, if this was a military type of environment, but it really did feel like the guy was just a bully, as Eric said. At least in my opinion, Mike. And because sure. I mean, he at first he seemed cordial, and then he immediately had the big fight with him. It was almost like he would just act normal, and then out of the blue, he would just roar at Patterson's character, and that made me say, okay, this guy's either nuts or as Eric said, he's just a bully. And whether he has this mindset that maybe this is to him, this is like the military or whatnot, I guess you're right, Mike. I guess he could look at it that way, but he was just a jerk. I mean, I would have.
Well, and I was like, but part of it is also, again, it's that unreliable narrator thing. I know I got cut off when I was talking about this when we were recording Joker because the cat walked across my laptop. But in that, there are a couple of particular instances where we are told that, you know, there's challenges, there are alternative versions, and we're meant to question what the right version is. But you can have a good idea that much of what happened transpired, if otherwise, really, the movie has no meaning. And the same thing kind of happens here, though. But there's no external reference to give us any sort of solid footing. And like, I think towards the end, when he's saying how
the thing with the axe.
Yeah. The thing with the axe.
I was going to ask you guys about that.
Was he being a dick about that and trying to set him up and say, you snapped? Did he snap? I don't know.
Did what we see actually happened and was Willem Dafoe gaslighting him, or are we witnessing the story of an unreliable narrator? I wasn't sure.
And there's things that happen in there.
He's being gaslit because there's a couple of places where that happens. Like when they have the storm and then Winslow comes in and the captain says to him, you missed a pickup. We've been here X number of days. After Winslow tells him one thing, the captain literally turns around and repeats it back to him, but changes it, completely changes it. And that happens three times with him. So I thought he was maybe gaslighting because then Winslow reads the book and you see his eyes reflect with horror at what he's reading in the book. But we don't know what he actually reads in the book.
Well, I'm thinking that's a fair point about the book, but I'm thinking he wasn't gaslit. And the reason I think that is because we find out that the whole all along he's been lying about who he is, and that he murdered someone back up when he was a lumberjack up in Canada. So I think he was already crazy and insane at that point. So everything is, in other words, I think he was truly the unreliable narrator, and Defoe's character wasn't smart enough or not not deceitful enough or ingenious enough to see an insane man in front of him and, oh, I'm going to gaslight him and trick him and make him think he's even more insane than he really is. I think.
Well, clearly Winslow is, you know, suffering from one of the Poe triggers, which is driven to madness by extreme guilt.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm thinking. That's why I don't think he was gaslit. I think he was already an unreliable narrator the whole time.
So maybe he was hearing things that weren't there. Is there reason
to think that he actually did murder the guy as opposed to it being the accident that you described it as?
Well, because there's the fact that he's being haunted by it. Yeah, there's specific imagery. Like, we do get an image of the guy, I guess he killed, is blonde. Mm-hmm, and we do get an image of, like, the blonde, like we're kind of looking at him from the top down, and the blonde guy is wearing a flannel shirt. But
right.
It's almost like he's bent down, like he's going to get his head chopped off. It's a very specific image.
Because even as he describes it, he basically says he's watching the guy die and didn't care. So
right,
could just
that's,
as easily,
that's what I'm saying.
But I'm saying, because the guy could just easily be the murdered by omission, as opposed to, you know, in that he just didn't bother to help the guy.
Right. Which, in a sense, is kind of a evil too.
Well, it's a different kind of evil, and that could be a different guilt. And fundamentally, in the end, he's guilty over the death of this person, whether he caused it directly or just didn't try to make an effort to save him.
Right.
And is feeling guilt over his death. But I mean, I don't know. To me, there's a little bit of a difference then in interpreting and empathy towards the character. But. Yeah, I don't know. I guess, and I just fundamentally don't care enough about the character.
Right.
That I care whether he was crazy, not crazy, murderer, not murderer. And neither character is terribly likable, and I don't necessarily need a film to have a likable character. But if you're not having an interesting story.
Right.
So hook on these unlikable characters, then...
Well, that's the problem with the story, in a sense, too, is that you're supposed to, it appears, like Patterson at the beginning, and then literally in the middle of the film, when you find out that he spills the beans, he becomes an unsympathetic character. And also, even when he kills the seagull, even though the seagull was a piece of garbage, pain in the ass, whatever, I mean... The way he just snapped to kill the seagull also makes him unsympathetic. So yeah, you're basically kind of liking the character, even if you're not invested in the character. And then when he snaps and also spills the beans, and that's you still have an hour left of the film. Now you're watching two characters that you don't like at all. For another hour. And again, that's not a problem. I mean, you mentioned that, Mike. I mean, a lot of gangster films are like that. I mean, you don't supposed to like the characters or whatever. But they have a story. And here, again, there's no story. It's now just an hour of two characters that you dislike, basically a character study of both of them.
Well, and here's the other. Did any of you guys catch the whole alcohol thing that was going on there, too?
Yeah, because Patterson didn't want to drink originally, and similar to the film The Unforgiven, as they go deeper and deeper into darkness, the booze is as a symbol of the darkness, in a sense, because in that film, The Unforgiven, he starts drinking again, and in this film, Patterson is quote-unquote innocent and doesn't drink, and then suddenly by the end, he's pounding grain alcohol as if it's water. Oh, and then
was
kerosene.
I was going to say, oh my God, were they drinking kerosene? Like,
yes.
I was going to ask you guys that because
yeah,
I was
yeah,
like,
they were. When they ran,
wow.
When they ran out of the grain alcohol,
right?
Basically, they had the bottles, and then that ran out, and then they went to get supplies that were buried, and when they unburied the supplies, they find out it's really just grain alcohol. And so they drank that up, and then when they finished drinking that up, they go into kerosene and actually using kerosene as mixed with water, similar to how people use wood alcohol to get drunk. So yeah, so that was pretty bad.
So if they weren't insane yet, they sure were after that.
Yeah. Once they're drinking kerosene, you know that they're gone. That's for sure. So yeah, Chrissy, you're saying about the alcohol that basically what I said, how it as the film goes and they more and more alcohol and then finally kerosene. I assume you were trying to say something where the A to Z from no booze to booze or booze properly to abusive. You were trying to, I guess, think you felt there was something there.
Yeah. I thought that the descent into madness was helped along by the fact that they just kept getting more and more drunk. Like, because after a while, it was just like, we're drunk on this really heavy stuff. And, I mean, we're not talking about, like, you know, whiskey or rum or – I mean, we're talking about, like,
grain alcohol.
Yeah, it's poison. Like, it's literally poison. And also, you know, back then, you know, we take it for granted today. Like, the things that we consume, even though a lot of stuff has chemicals now, I'll just stay away from that whole argument. But the things that we consume are relatively pure, or they're cured. Like, you know, when everybody says, oh, alcohol is pretty safe because it pretty much kills whatever is in it. But, you know, back in those days, you were talking about things that were not necessarily distilled cleanly. They were not, you know, God knows what the hell kind of toxins was in that stuff.
No,
you know,
I think that my main takeaway from this film, as it has been for a great many films similar to this, I just thank fucking God I live in the United States of America in the year 2019.
Well, and you know what else helped their descent into madness, Chrissy? The farts! Oh, God, the farts!
That was really amusing to me. I just couldn't even handle that.
Dude, when he threw the shit into the wind and it goes back at him, I was like, oh my, what a dumbass. That's disgusting. I was like, oh. He takes that chamber pox and he throws him into the ocean, and of course the wind's blowing right back at him.
Yeah, like,
what,
you've
a
never done it.
Ass. Oh my God.
Jesus.
I know, but, you know, I will say, though, that I do think one of the things that was also kind of fun for this film, for me anyway, because I was having a few moments of fun, or there were things that sort of interested me. I was like, oh my God, that place must smell horrendous.
Yeah,
like,
right.
Between the farting and the chamber pot.
You smell of jism. You smell like curdled foreskin or something.
Oh,
like
yeah,
that.
Curdled foreskin. Yep.
And thank you for that fucking image.
Yeah. Let's talk about this, because obviously we forgot, and it just occurred to me now that Defoe's character we knew was nuts right from the beginning, because the first thing I noticed that was nuts about him was, why would there be a lock on the lighthouse, and I mean, you know, at the very top of the lighthouse, and why would they use it when there's only two people there, first of all? And second, obviously, him doing his weird nude scenes up in the lighthouse, you know, during his watch. And it's like, that made no sense, too, unless, you know, he just likes the hot light of the lighthouse or something. I don't know what the hell it is. It's just weird, because he doesn't explain it later. If he said, dude, I know this is weird, but I'd like
that. You don't like to hang out naked at the top of lighthouses?
Yeah, it was just, no, I guess not. I wouldn't think so. So, again, there's only two people, so it doesn't matter. But it's weird that he would have no inhibitions to and would just do that. But go on, Chrissy.
Well, what I was going to say about that, well, first of all, there were a lot of things about locks and keys in this. I mean, just as a general visual symbol. And I think it was actually pretty obvious if you think about it. I think it was just like a subtle subtext of, hey, these men don't know each other's secrets. I think that was really all it was for. But what was interesting was, again, we get back to, is this supernatural or is this just madness and unreliable narrator? There's that moment where he sneaks up there. Winslow sneaks up there and, you know, there is naked Captain laying on the grate of the lighthouse floor above him. And the guy is clearly masturbating or whatever. Defoe is masturbating. And then but there's like a tentacle and all this you see slide by. And then you see this drop when the guy comes that I guess is supposed to be jism, but I'm like, dude, okay, I'm sorry, semen doesn't look like that. Like, they literally made it look like big slimy jelly from like a sea creature.
Right.
So
right,
I
right.
was like,
and,
okay.
And they
so
also,
what's going on there?
And they also, I don't know if there was that scene or what, where they like cut him jerking off to the sound of the ocean spray, which I thought
was
a funny
kind of a little much. Yeah,
I thought that was kind of just a funny, you know. I'm not saying the movie was utterly without entertainment. It just wasn't with enough entertainment for an hour and 15 minutes.
I would agree.
Right.
Now, I actually thought it would make a great short film, like a 15 or 20 minute short film. I thought it would have been very effective. It had been streamlined, and if they had decided whether they were trying to make a supernatural comment or a comment about madness. I just think it would have been better.
All right, so my checklist here. Let's go to the next one I wanted to ask you guys.
Oh my God,
so, more? Yeah, there's a few. I got a couple more. I have the question is,
the Fonz!
Patterson, or Winslow, he says, and first of all, he claims he sees the body of the prior second Wiki.
Right.
And
he pulls his decapitated head up in a lobster trap.
Right. And then he claims that, I guess he confronts Defoe's character, and Defoe denies it. So the question is, did that really happen, or is that, again, just unreliable narrator crap, and he's just going insane?
It could go either way. I think it happened.
But the head was too preserved.
Yeah, I think it was unreliable narrator, Eric, because in the beginning, they show the switch off, right? So the two of them are dropped off there. So how could he have killed a guy that freshly and nobody noticed? Do you know what
right.
I mean?
And
like,
and the body a month later,
been, right?
The trap isn't eaten up yet.
I don't even know how the hell a human-sized head gets into a lobster trap.
The same way a lobster gets into a lobster trap.
Lobster traps walk into it, and lobsters are leaner. They can maneuver their way in, as opposed to this thing the size of a soccer ball. I tend to work under, and again, this is in the ocean. There are crabs and stuff that are going to pick the crap out of that.
Fair enough.
You know, we're assuming that this
Want to not be talking about this movie anymore.
Yeah, I know. This was not a movie I was looking forward to talking to either. You were just, but we all know why you wanted to talk about this film, Eric.
I didn't want to talk about this film. I'm just doing that to keep myself entertained until it's over. The Fonz! Oh, God, the Fonz!
Yeah. I will say that the Patterson's whole thing about the curdled foreskin and the Fonz and all of that, that whole thing. That was a fucking fantastic little soliloquy.
Wasn't it great? The
other good one was about the cooking. And Defoe goes on a tear about burning in hells.
Oh, yeah. Because you don't like my cooking. And then he's like cursing him with the, you know, talking about Neptune and Poseidon and all of that. And
intense shit.
Yeah, that was awesome. All right, I got another thing on my checklist here. The mermaid. Well, Eric, calm down. Now, the mermaid, what the fuck was that all about? That was him.
That was a fantasy.
Yeah, that's probably what
it was. It was a fantasy because he found the statue.
That, apparently, the mermaid vagina was based off shark's anatomy.
Well, that was very Lovecraftian, too, though. The whole, like, that whole image of her vagina was extremely Lovecraftian, very much so.
Well, I learned something about mermaids today while reading about this, which is apparently the original image of a mermaid was two-tailed. It had two tails off to either side, thus permanently exposing its genitals to be penetrated by a male at any point in time. Of the male's choosing.
As
the original design is a male fantasy.
It
got modified to have a single tail.
Interesting.
Wow, that is interesting.
How about that?
Anyone else here sweating now?
we stink like Jism and Fonz.
Curled foreskin and the Fonz. Oh, God, the Fonz!
All right, now on the checklist. Eric, you have to go. The Cthulhu stuff. What was up with that? And the lighthouse.
Bullshit hallucinations. Nice.
What was in the lighthouse? Was it nothing? And they were just both insane?
Yeah.
I have this one. This is apparently straight from... Eggers. Apparently, the two lead male characters represent figures in Greek mythology. Wake's character represents Proteus, an old prophetic sea god, whom Homer called Old Man of the Sea. Winslow character represents Prometheus, a titan and trickster figure who defies the gods, Wake's character, by stealing fire, represented by the light of the lighthouse.
Are you kidding me? He really was that into, made this film as a metaphor for someone else's.
Phil, you keep believing that people don't do these things. They do these things. But, and then, of course, that makes a little bit of sense now, because you have at the end him falling down and his liver being picked up by the seagulls.
Yeah, that totally makes sense. But I was going to say, that makes total sense.
But I don't think that's a thing that's apparent on why. Maybe it's me.
That's my point. Mike, is, as Chrissy said, it's like, if you're not familiar with this crap, and I am familiar with this crap.
I didn't think of it, because he doesn't steal the fire. He peeks through the window.
I'm familiar with it too, but most people aren't, and they're going to be going, it's not, none of this means anything to them.
Right.
And even for us who know this and say that, like Chrissy figured a lot of it out, but even for her, it meant nothing.
Yeah. So
what was the point? Except, what? I don't know.
That's what I said. It's like a bad MFA project. It's like, I'm familiar with this. Let's just fill it up with lots of pretty shit that people need to figure out, but you're not taking into account that your art means nothing if nobody understands it.
Right.
That's my point.
And even if you do understand it, like a lot of the stuff that you said you understood, Chrissy, why does it matter? What does it mean? What was important?
Well, yeah, because in this particular movie, that it's just a mess, I think. That's why. Like, there's no – I'm totally in agreement. It's not – you know, if you're going to do that stuff, then it has to either make an impression on the viewer or contribute to, you know, the understanding of it, or it has to mean something. You know, and this just looked like, to me – Eggers going, I want to write a big love letter to Poe and Lovecraft and Greek mythology and the Rime of the Ancient Mariner and Moby Dick. And I want to just make this big masturbatory thing that doesn't freaking make any sense. That's kind of what I felt like.
Literally,
I was like,
masturbatory.
Yeah.
I was thinking that to her.
But also, Chrissy, I mean, don't you think you got to pare back some of the references in a 2-hour film? Otherwise,
yeah,
they just
too
become.
Much. Well, that was the other thing, too, that I felt.
It becomes a jumbled metaphor?
It is. That's why I said it's kind of a mess. I mean, he's got, like, this isn't like, okay, I want to make a love letter to Edgar Allan Poe and maybe a couple hints of Lovecraft. Okay, but then pick the Lovecraftian stuff that works with the Poe stuff thematically. Don't just like go, oh, we're going to just do all this random Lovecraft shit and all this random Poe shit and just throw it all together. That's the first problem. Then on top of that, he's putting in, like I said, Greek mythology, but not really making enough associations so that anybody can even mildly pick up on that if you understand Greek, you know, Greek mythology at all.
Right.
Then he's got Rime of the Ancient Mariner, which is like Samuel Taylor Coleridge, and he was one of, I believe, the Romantic poets, which is a completely fucking different time period. Like, it just, that's what I mean. And then, oh, Moby Dick. And that's like 100 years after Rime of the Ancient Mariner. Do you see what I mean? It just doesn't make
sense. Never mind.
Disaster.
Never mind.
Like, little, pick one thing mind, and stick with it.
Never mind. The mermaid, too.
Oh, yeah. And the mermaids. And, you know, I mean,
well,
it's like,
but
you
know,
like,
I saw
everything and threw it together.
And Alfred Hitchcock reference with the birds. I'm telling you, that's what it is.
Yeah, that's true. I agree, Phil. I agree.
But in that, Chrissy, it reminds me a bit of the movie Mother.
Which was
a metaphorical film, but I found it was a mixed metaphorical film, and because they had some biblical and some Earth Mother stuff and other. By mixing those metaphors, it made it to me almost, you know, kind of inscrutable, because you're combining different mythologies together and made it hard for the audience to follow, where it would have been easier if it would just stuck with Christian mythology, but then it wouldn't have been able to tell the story he wanted to tell. So he brought in, you know, very like Hindu myth and other myths,
right,
and wove them into what was blatant Christian metaphor, which just made it confusing. You know, it was sort of like this, and that it was an interestingly crafted film, but everyone walked out going, "What the fuck was that?"
Well, yeah. Mike, and I, you have a fair point, which is people do these things. They like doing these things, and they throw these things in. They like referencing things and stuff. And you're right. There's nothing wrong with that. But I guess what I'm figuring out, and Chrissy summed it up perfectly because she says this is the point of the film, is a love letter to Poe, Lovecraft, Roman, Greek mythology, mermaids, Hitchcock, you know, on and on and on. And I guess now I understand that I guess I don't like those type of films. I like films that aren't a love letter to something else, but instead trying to say something.
Well, and films, you know, there's nothing wrong with films that are personal love letters, just like there's nothing wrong with short stories or novels that are love letters. But the thing is, you can make it a love letter, but if you want people to understand your message and what you're trying to say, then you need to make it so that it's not so dense that nobody gets it, or because then the story isn't making its point, right? Part of the point of art is to help us interpret the world or bring us comfort when we're sad because we feel like we're not alone because, oh, look, here's this movie and I understand it and I relate to it. So therefore, if you have something that only one person in the entire world relates to, how is that sharing? Like, how is that really bettering the world? That's why I said it's like really self-indulgent.
I understand what you're saying. I have to disagree a little bit, even though I didn't particularly enjoy this movie myself. I think this movie is a successful piece of art. I think he did what he wanted to do. I think it looks great. I think it sounds great. I think it's worthy of admiration and existence.
Yeah.
Where it fails is not as a piece of art, as a piece of storytelling. It fails
that
completely.
I would, yes. Yes, I agree.
And for that, again, now Mr. Scorsese might say it succeeds as a piece of cinema, where I'll say it fails as a movie.
Okay.
Right.
Yeah.
I think that's what it is,
you know,
at this point.
And like, you know, we're talking about all the Poe stuff. Now, I'm not going to sit here and go into 50,000 allusions because, believe me, it would be boring.
What?
However,
now.
Yeah. Well,
we already got us on like 6 bullet points, so just keep going.
Well, what's interesting is Poe's last short story that he wrote was called The Lighthouse, but it was never finished. And many writers over time have, you know, kind of added their own take on what that story might have been. There have been anthologies in which writers try to finish the piece. Famous Monsters of Filmland published Robert Bloch's, you know, finishing of it, quote, end quote, in the late 1960s. There was a book called The Lighthouse at the End of the World by Stephen Marlowe that was sort of like The Last Days of Poe, but it was a fantasy adventure mystery that was kind of confusing and featured bouts out of reality, actually, just like what this film is doing. That's what that book is like. So I just found that incredibly interesting because to me, that was like a serious connection. Like, okay, is this his rendering? Because The Lighthouse, the Poe story, is a first person, you know, kind of like Telltale Heart. It's a first person, or scholars think it's a first person confessional, because it's all about like a journal, you know, the first day he gets there and this is what he sees and blah, blah, blah. So it was probably going to be another one of Poe's Descent into Madness tales. You know, you also have references in this film very obviously connected to Descent into the Maelstrom, which is another Poe story. So, I mean, I don't know. I just wanted to talk about that just because that to me was the most obvious thing. But, you know.
Well, Chrissy.
Are we done now?
Chrissy, you summed it up perfectly when you gave your synopsis at the beginning of, you know, your opinion of the film, because you're right. It is a Lovecraft and Poe love letter, with
as we discussed, all this other stuff thrown in too, and so you're absolutely right. You had to bring that stuff up because I mean the squid, you know, when you see the tentacles, I mean that's obviously Lovecraft. When you see people going insane, that's obviously Poe and Lovecraft. You know, on and on and on. So obviously, all that was relevant, and so it was good that you brought all that stuff up. Absolutely. Anything else anybody had? Any other things?
I actually do have a question.
Yes.
This is an honest question because I did not understand this, and I'm hoping one of you guys did because maybe I missed it. What was the whole business with Winslow making the captain follow him outside like a dog?
Ah, good. That was on my checklist that I was.
What the fuck? Did I miss something?
This is what I think, Chrissy, because I wanted to ask you guys that question too. But I'll say my opinion. I think he was buying his time so he could get the axe and take out Winslow later. But also, they were both in a drunkard stupor too. So if he wasn't drunk on kerosene, never mind being drunk, I don't think he would have gone along with it that easily. But also, I think he was buying his time anyway. And also, at that point, everything's unreliable because, I mean, we're already talking about something mystical is up in the top of the lighthouse when there probably isn't there anyway. So that was my take on it. But I don't know what Eric or Mike think, or even what your thoughts were, Chrissy, because your thoughts are probably as good as ours, even though you're the one that's asking the question.
Well, I was confused by it because, you know, the captain had been so domineering and so nasty and whatever. But even when Winslow was, you know, complaining about what, Eric?
The farts.
Okay.
Oh, God, the farts.
So even when Winslow was doing that, the captain is still being a domineering, nasty asshole. So honestly, I couldn't understand why all of a sudden this guy who was in control the whole time, the whole film, he's being a dick, he's the heavy hand. Now, all of a sudden, he's being really weirdly subservient in a really odd way that doesn't seem to make sense at all, like doesn't connect to anything. I was like, did a scene cut or
beatdown put on him?
Well, yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, still, he was still kind of an asshole. I mean, it just seemed like it wouldn't.
He was a complete asshole, but I think the reason he put him in that, with the reason he was getting treated like a dog, Patterson was treating him like a dog, because that's what he felt he'd been treated like the whole time.
Okay.
Yeah, but that was his revenge.
Yeah, but I think you're also missing the fact there, Eric, that Eggers is a very smart filmmaker. He's obviously a very learned man, a very studied man. And you notice he had a comment where Winslow, or whatever his real name was, refers to him as being short. And another term for short would be little. So he's clearly trying to tell us that little dogs need to be buried alive.
Oh, there we go.
Nicely done, Mike. Nicely done.
And that is the theme of the film right there. Little dogs need to be put down. Let's wrap it up.
And I would like to wrap this up too, I think, but I did want to tell one quick story. You know, stories about abandoned lighthouses and things. Of course, there's a lot of ghost stories that are associated with lighthouses. They've always been pretty creepy. But there's one interesting thing. When I went to go see this movie, when I first saw the ad for it, I was sort of hoping that it was going to maybe be an interpretation of a very famous real life lighthouse mystery that still has not been solved to this day. And I just wanted to quickly share it in a couple of sentences. In 1900, there was a lighthouse in the Flannan Islands off the coast of, I think it's Scotland. It's in the Outer Hebrides. But anyway, and they were doing what we saw in the beginning of this film, which was that switch off, you know, where the old guys are the new guys are coming in to replace the old guys for a specified amount of time. And when they got there, the doors were open. Two out of three of the oilskins were missing. There was food on the table in the kitchen as though they were in the middle of a meal. A chair was overturned and the kitchen clock had stopped. Nobody knows what happened to those lightkeepers. They have bodies never washed up. They never found any clues. They never found any like clothes anywhere. Everything else was in order. And so I was sort of hoping when I went into this movie that, ooh, maybe this is going to be like one of those like sort of interpretations of what happened, but that didn't work out.
No, I think this sounds like a job for Encyclopedia Brown.
Yes, absolutely.
God, I love those books.
I was a big Nancy Drew person myself, but I think I'm older than you guys. Well, I'm older than Eric. I don't know.
No, but that was all in the same era. I think I might have liked this one better than Braid, but
not by much.
Not by a lot. It's the same to me, sort of inscrutable story that
art housey bullshit.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you know, it's the thing. Listen, I love a really intelligent artsy film if it's well done and it has something to say and it's compelling and the characters are great and the story's great. You know, like It Follows, I really loved. I thought that was really fun and really interesting. So I don't mind a good art house film. I just don't like it when it's an art house film that just literally makes no sense. Like, to me, that just is like, why are you doing this? Like I said, it's self-indulgent. It's, one of my professors, I think it was Dan Perlman, actually, who passed in college. He was my mentor, used to say, if you're not going to send out your work and have your work be clear and understandable to everybody, you might as well just sit at your desk and masturbate on a piece of paper. That's what he used to
say.
Well,
that was what Robert Pattinson
feels like. It feels like masturbatory, like let's masturbate on a piece of paper. That's what this feels like. But anyway.
All right. Any other checkpoints anybody wanted to bring up about this film here?
No.
All right. All right. With that stated, we'll give our final thoughts after. But we have some news that Abe sent us an email, co-host Abe, because he's going to join us. He has an email. And then we have some news of significance that we probably want to discuss a little bit. And so, Chrissy, you have Abe's email?
I do. He says, hey, everyone, this is Abe. Sorry that I can only be in the form of this message, but work has been really picking up lately. I thought I'd present some bits of news for tonight's recording. Recently, a teaser trailer has been dropped for a Netflix adaptation of Bram Stoker's Dracula, starring an actor by the name of Cleese Bang in the role of the titular character. The miniseries is set
titular.
Is it supposed to be titular? I don't know. Looks like titular.
No, you said it right. We're just 12.
Shit. All right. The miniseries. Go ahead, Eric. One more time.
Titular.
The miniseries is set to be 3 episodes long and slated to be out in 2020. In news concerning animation, season 3 of The Dragon Prince, created by Aaron. Oh, wow. This one's going to catch me up. Ahas and Justin Richmond, the former being the head writer and director of Avatar The Last Airbender, is coming out on Netflix on November 22nd. Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark, the film based on the popular book series, which we had covered in a previous episode, is now available in digital form with a DVD release scheduled for November 5th. Okay, this is a Chrissy comment. That's really fast. I mean, this movie was just in the theaters in August.
That's not that unusual, though.
Okay. Yeah. I also have been watching an anime series called Vinland Saga, which is set in England during the 11th century. Yes, it is a Viking anime, and it is really damn good so far. As far as I know, it is only available through Amazon Prime Video, so if you have an account and this sounds like something up your alley, then check it out.
Well, all I know is Viking anime is some form of cultural appropriation, but I'm not sure who's appropriating who there.
Okay. Yeah, absolutely. He writes, that's all I have right now. Hopefully I will be able to pop in the next recording. Have a good one, everyone, and have a spooky Halloween.
Speaking of another film that just made VOD, if the person I spoke to is correct, because they asked me last night if I had seen it, and I said I didn't know what the hell they were talking about because he asked, have you seen It Too? And I thought he was talking about something else, but It Too or Chapter Two. I said, I
don't think it's at theaters anymore, so how can you see it? He says, oh, it's now on VOD. So I think it has arrived on VOD.
Surprise me.
Yeah, so folks who have missed that one can now check it out on VOD as well as...
Yeah, they're putting all these things out on VOD, especially, as quickly as they can. Right. It's just the way of the world.
Right.
Speaking of VOD, I have watched a significant number of things I want to touch on. Do you want to do it before or after news, Phil?
Let me just throw this out first, Eric, because it's related to VOD, and then we'll do the news after what you said. But Apple Plus at $4.99 per month is released November 1st, this Friday, I think. So, folks, so far
not getting good reviews.
I don't know. I mean, I know they're saying that one of the big shows on there is Mixed, but it's still getting 71% on Rotten Tomatoes, which is fairly decent. So, I mean,
well, but again, you have to know how Rotten Tomatoes works. You can get 71% of people saying, meh, it's okay. And that's 71%. It's not, you know, 71% says it's awesome.
Right, that's a fair point. But either way, that's just one program. So they're obviously going to have a bunch of stuff over there, including some pretty cool science fiction thing that's going on. I forget what that's called, but what is it?
The one with Jason Momoa? Is that what you're talking about?
That looks pretty solid, at least the trailer.
The concept didn't sound that thrilling to me.
I'm not sure
me either.
When's that supposed to be released? Do you know?
Who knows?
I think a problem is going to. How is Apple TV supposed to be available?
Just as an app, like
it's as an app. Of course, it'll be on all your Apple devices by default. I think it's also going to be available for Roku and Amazon Fire, and I believe it's even on some Samsung and Sony smart TVs.
Right, I mean, because that's the main thing is that they got to get it on as many devices as they can.
Yeah. Oh, don't worry, it'll be on plenty of devices.
Yeah.
That's not my primary concern. My primary concern is that Apple is a tech company, not an entertainment company, and I have no faith in the quality of their entertainment material until it's proven to me.
Well, here's the thing.
Have you already signed up for it, or you plan to sign up for it?
I will probably be buying an Apple device in the next year, at which point I will get a year for free.
Oh, is that true? Okay.
Yeah, and Eric, they're just basically going to. I mean, the advantage that they can have is if their shows suck, they can fire all the people in charge and just keep hiring new people until they finally get something that works.
Yeah, they've got money to burn, and they can do that until they get it right. I'd be surprised if they get it right out of the gate.
Right, and how much money are they willing to burn? You may have the money to burn, doesn't mean you want to do it.
A lot of money to burn. Yeah. Like they're the only one that can compete with Disney as far as piles of cash goes.
Yeah, and it wouldn't surprise me if they burn them. They're willing to do it because I mean, Shudder, like is owned by AMC, and that's not going to make profits for a couple of years. The same, and they're sticking it out and they're creating shows and stuff. So Apple obviously is bigger than AMC, and not only that, they have software too. So I could see them.
But Shudder is a relatively small service. And they just had like huge hit ratings hit with Creepshow apparently. So
right, and that's all you need is one show like that. And
and I haven't even checked that out yet because I haven't had a minute. But I just want to check it out. I haven't read any reviews. I have no idea if it's any good, but it just kind of is piquing my interest. So anyway, go ahead. I have a couple things I wanted to talk about too, but you guys go ahead and then I'm.
All right. So Eric, go ahead with your stuff first. That's fine.
Okay.
Yeah.
I have watched all these movies. I like them all more than The Lighthouse, FYI. First one is kind of a, they label it as a horror. I would call it more of a sci-fi anthology called Portals. Eduardo Sanchez is involved with that movie, if that means anything to anyone. I liked one of the sections I did not care for, the rest I enjoyed. So overall, I'd give that a positive review.
Was this the Eduardo Sanchez of Lovely Molly?
Yes.
Eduardo Sanchez of Exists and the Blair Witch Project?
Yes, that one. Mm-hmm. Okay. I also watched a movie called Trick. which is a new slasher. I liked it. I liked it more before they like out-clevered themselves on this one. It was a kind of a straightforward slasher for most of the movie, and I was really enjoying it as such. And they like tried to do a little twisty turny, and that's I thought was made it worse. I was actually really enjoying having a fresh new slasher. But overall, I still enjoyed the movie. I watched The Nightingale, which is Jennifer Kent's new movie. She directed The Babadook. I wouldn't call this one a horror movie, but I think it would appeal to a lot of horror fans. It's definitely one of the more horrific things I've seen in quite some time. Rape and murder abound. Trigger warnings of all sorts apply to this movie. So if it sounds like that's up your alley, set in, I think, 1825 colonial Australia.
Oh, this is the Babadook one, right? The same director.
He literally just said that.
Yeah, okay. I was confused, though. Okay, sorry about that.
Let's see. I rewatched a movie called Come Back to Me, which we did an episode on. It's available streaming on Amazon Prime right now. So I would recommend checking that out if you hadn't seen it.
And that was one of my movie recommends for the month.
It was. It was actually your recommend that triggered me to rewatch that. I was like, oh, I remember liking that movie. I wonder if it holds up. And it does hold up. I posted it under your mic.
I said, great pick.
But actually watched it, listened and watched it, not just saying, right. I like it. Or this was a good
movie. I actually bought the disc.
Moving on. The next thing I watched was called Assimilate, which is on Netflix. It is a pretty straightforward ripoff of Invasion of the Body Snatchers, but as such, is a decent one. It's worth a Netflix watch.
Better than the last couple of actual Invasion of the Body Snatcher films?
I would say it's you know, not as good as the 71s. Better than the one with Nicole Kidman in it.
Okay.
Whatever that means.
The 78 one though is.
That's
awesome.
The classic.
I was referring to the 93 and 2000.
Who's in the 93 one? Is that the Nicole Kidman one?
No, that's Meg Tilly. I don't know if I ever saw the 93 one.
That one's Body Snatchers, and since they use Body Snatchers and for the Nicole Kidman one, they just went with Invasion, which was with her and Daniel Craig, right before he became.
Yeah, that one I didn't care for. The Assimilate's better than that, I would say, but you know. You're not going to be surprised by the story. You know it. Then I watched a movie. I rented a movie that I really enjoyed called The Dead Center. It actually stars directly by Billy Senesi. I don't know how to pronounce his last name. It's S-E-N-E-S-E. Senesi, maybe? I don't know. But it stars Shane Carruth. Shane Carruth made his way with he did the movie Primer. Anybody that remembers that, he starred and directed that. So I found this to be a pretty fresh horror movie for a change. And in the land of remakes and sequels, I found it to be a bit of an oasis as far as being something not the same as everything else that's out there.
Michelle Barkley already posted saying that she took note.
Yeah, so I recommend The Dead Center as a new. It says 2018 here in Letterboxd, but I haven't had it available to me until now, so I'm counting it on my 2019 list.
Okay. Anything else, Eric?
That's it.
All right, Eric, have you seen Rattlesnake? A buddy of mine mentioned that he saw that on Netflix and said it was pretty solid.
I have not.
Okay, I was just curious.
I got an email about it. I haven't watched it.
I read one review. They didn't like it, but that's one review. I don't know what that means. Besides that, he didn't like it. I don't know. I wouldn't apply it broadly.
Eric, what do you mean you got an email? Netflix?
Netflix emailed me about that movie.
Right. Say that you may like it and so forth. Mm-hmm. All right, sounds good. Chrissy, you said there was some stuff that you wanted to bring up.
Just a couple of things. I did finish the final season or the last season of Terror, Infamy. I highly recommend it. I think it's, just as good, if not better, than the first season. And if you're a fan of J horror and that, then definitely check it out. But it really is a human drama. The backdrop is the Japanese American internment camps in World War II. So they're really tackling some very meaty, interesting, and brave material here.
Is there a lot of are the Japanese Americans? Do they speak mostly English, or is there, they're like immigrant Japanese, and so there's a lot of subtitles?
It's both. It's okay. Both. I would not say that there is an excessive amount of subtitles, because it's not. There are subtitles that appear at least once every episode, but it's not like for long periods of time. Like, it's not, you know, you'll be fine. I think the ending was satisfying. I really enjoyed it. I think there was some wonderful creepy imagery. It's just really good stuff. It's got a lot going on that, you know, about family and things like that. The bad news is I have been reading that we're not sure if we're going to get another season of The Terror, because apparently the ratings for season 2 were not as good as they'd hoped. And in fact, I guess they were kind of dismal. But that's a shame, because really this is excellent and I highly recommend it. The other movie I watched, was kind of weird, was Eli on Netflix.
I forgot. I watched that too. I forgot to put it on my list.
Yeah. Yeah. I gotta say it's interesting, because, you know, there's a lot of crap on Netflix and you never know when you're going to get a horror movie and you're just like, what the fuck did I just watch? This is not one of those. It's got an interesting tonal shift in it, and it's kind of strange, because normally a tonal shift like that would just not work. You'd be like, oh my God, dude, what is this? I don't agree with that. I think it's interesting. It starts off as one kind of film and sort of ends up as another. And so if you're looking for something to watch on Netflix that's a horror film, I'm not going to say it's the greatest movie I've ever seen. I'm not going to say, I'm just going to say it's a pretty safe bet. It's a safe bet.
Actually,
like, you're
Christy,
not. Yeah.
Your comments on Facebook about that movie are what compelled me to watch it to begin with.
Oh, really?
Because you're talking about how some people were like, I don't get the ending. And if you don't get the ending, you're pretty slow.
Yeah, yeah, totally.
I have to agree with you.
I mean, it's pretty freaking obvious.
Good
Lord. They
spell it out pretty clearly. Yes.
Yeah,
yes,
they
yes,
really
indeed.
Do. But I'm glad. Let's put it this way. I was highly entertained for the entire movie. I was never bored.
Right.
Yep. The tonal shift didn't bother me. So if you're looking for a halfway decent horror movie because you just want to be entertained for an hour and a half and have a good time, that is a safe one. You're not going to get to the end of it and go, this was crap. That, you know, it's not the greatest thing ever, but it's not garbage either. And then I have a bit of personal news, Phil.
Okay.
I just launched my own literary magazine.
Oh, cool.
Yep. And it's called 34 Orchard, and everybody can go check it out at 34orchard.com. If you're a writer, our submissions open January 1st.
Write an Apple book?
Yeah, I did, called Bad Apple.
Ah, now you got a literary magazine, 34 Orchard.
Pretty cool.
Ew.
Yes. The magazine is going to be published in spring. I'm going to have two issues, one in the spring, one in the fall.
You're doing it alone?
Yes, doing it alone. The submission periods will be the months of January and July. I pay $50 for a short story, regardless of length, and $50 for a poem. And the PDFs will be available free. However, there is a way that you can donate if you would like to support my effort, because I am paying for this all out of my pocket myself. I have very low overhead. I just want to make sure I pay my writers. So,
I'm sorry. I just went to the website and Norton popped up and said it might be a scam website.
Really?
Yeah. Probably because it's a brand new website.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. That usually happens, yeah.
Yeah, we are listed on Duotrope as well. So if you're a writer and you're on Duotrope, Duotrope approved me within like 2 hours, which was kind of crazy because a lot of times new listings don't, you know, get up there that easily. So yeah, so I'm very excited about it. And anyway, that's that. That's all my news.
All right, very good. Yeah, I've seen a bunch of older films because I'm doing like that 31 film challenge for Halloween. Though I'm not even close. I'm probably like 15. But I did see two newer films during that period that I wanted to bring up because they're VOD available and worth mentioning, not to avoid, but to actually check out. The first one is called Doom Room. Basically, rhyming words there. It's a pretty solid horror film. A woman wakes up in a room that has all this weird stuff in it and doesn't know why. It's not like one of those rooms where someone's captured and tortured or anything like that. It's just that she just wakes up in this room, weird room, and people appear and disappear, like ghosts and appear and disappear and stuff. And so it's really interesting. And then as the film goes, you finally figure out what is happening and who she is, because she doesn't know why she's there, who she is. And of course, who all these ghosts are that keep on popping up. So that's a good hour and 30 minute mystery horror film worth checking out. And then another film called Replace. It seems like it's some sort of weird supernatural type film. A woman begins to have a skin disease, and certain things occur where she tries to get this corrected. And it oddly turns into a techno biological type thriller, science fiction type film at the end. So it's a horror and science fiction and tech thriller all together. It's kind of interesting. That one is a pretty solid film as well. So those films are both available on VOD pretty much anywhere and can be watched. So we're checking out. And I did check both DVD only, I think. No Blu-ray, that you can get for, you know, around $10. And we're checking out. Mike, anything that you wanted to bring up that you've seen or whatever before we get into real news? By the way, Mike, have you seen – I thought you were the one that mentioned it, but have you been following American Horror Story, the new one, the slasher one?
I have. It's not bad. It starts out as American Horror Story 1984, and that lasts for about 5 episodes or so, and then they start to move a little bit more in the future. But the series is following a couple of serial killers at a summer camp, and it's, you know, very tongue in cheek and sort of dealing with tropes of the 80s slasher films. And so that's the homage or the theme they're doing with this season. But then, as often happens with the series, it kind of escalates from there, and whether they can keep everything together or not will remain to be seen. But it's very clearly definitely set in the mythology of this particular universe. I've enjoyed it. If you like American Horror Story, so far I think it's going well. But that's a series that often can start out strong and then kind of crap the bed at the end. So we'll see what happens. I've been watching Creepshow. There's now one episode left. There are 6 episodes. 2 stories in each one. If you don't go in expecting it to be anything other than a horror anthology, I think it'll help because it's missing, at least at first, some of the stylistic flourishes of the original film. Although some start bringing some of those things in, like some of the animation and lighting. The music is a little bit more modern, and so it's more subdued than in the original film, and it's hit or miss like a lot of anthologies are, but I really like the last couple. I think that and there's the one from the first episode called The Head in the House that I thought was really really creepy, and I liked that a lot. I watched on I haven't had a chance to watch a lot, but I did watch on Shudder the Furies.
Yep, Eric mentioned that.
Which is a fun film. It is not necessarily a particularly deep film, although I can draw some commentary in there, I think, on both male-female relationships as well as female-female relationships. But if you're interested in seeing a thing with some really neat kills, it's got some really neat kills in it. And it definitely has a sequel possibility. And I think it's only like, Eric, you've seen that, right?
Yes.
It's only like, isn't it like only like an 85-minute movie?
I think so.
It's an Australian film. It's basically follows the premise of Predators. These women are abducted, dropped in the middle of a desert, and hunted down. There's more to the story than that. There's a neat little.
And there's no aliens, to be clear.
Right. There's no aliens, but it's right. Basically.
So they're like kidnapped and dropped off in the middle.
They're kidnapped, dropped off, and there's a little twist in the. And how the game plays out, but it's better to enjoy that as is. I won't spoil that for you. I think that was about it that I knew of I've been watching Watchmen on HBO, which it's the connections to the original comic book series, and it's definitely a sequel to the comic book series and not the film, at least in one important aspect. The connections are kind of tenuous right now. It is very well crafted. There is kind of one of these things that's sort of rolling out slowly. So we'll see where the story eventually ends up. But so far, it's promising. The, like I said, only very superficial similarities to the original story. But they've only done two episodes, and there's the connections becoming stronger in the second episode than they were in the first. And so they may get deeper and deeper and the connections may become more obvious later on. If you're a fan of Watchmen and are interested in more Watchmen content, I might recommend checking it out, even if the creator of the series has completely removed himself from anything to have to do with it anymore.
Gotcha. Any reason why he's leaving it? Because he...
Well, because, no, this is... Alan Moore is actually a strange individual who has principle.
No, and
he does not like his work being adapted, and he has never accepted a paycheck for any of the adaptations based on his work. And so he has no input in it, and he has no comment about it. He wants his.
He's not the guy that did Sin City, was he?
No, that's Frank Miller. No, gotcha. He did League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, V for Vendetta, Watchmen, among other things.
Gotcha. To add a couple of things to the two films I mentioned that I forgot, Replace has Barbara Crampton as a co-star, so fans of her, she's in that. And I just looked up Doom Room. Doom Room's actually free on Amazon Prime if you're a subscriber to Amazon Prime. All right, so...
And by the way, once again, you can get 30 days free for Shudder for just using the code SCARES.
Yep, that's right. Okay, sounds good. So news, two big news events, at least I know of. I'm sure there could be a couple more. The third one was the Apple release of their streaming, which comes out this end of this week. But the other two happened today. One was the Naomi Watts Game of Thrones spinoff has been canceled. They didn't like the pilot.
Game of Thrones, die.
The other one is Benioff and Weiss are not going to do Star Wars. After all, they dropped out today. Eric, why do you say that about Game of Thrones? I'm just curious.
I'm with Eric. I'm just going to go there with Eric.
Well, because, Phil, you made me hate Game of Thrones.
I did?
Yes, you did.
How did I do that?
Doing a podcast with you about Game of Thrones made me hate the show.
Why? What did I say on the podcast that I've said?
Oh, lots of things. Mostly just repetitive comments about Sophie Turner.
However, Phil, you missed another announcement though related to Game of Thrones.
Yeah, there's going to be a different spinoff now.
There's a different spinoff, which for some reason, but that you didn't feel like announcing, which is called House of the Dragon. That has been approved and picked up by HBO.
Oh no!
Yes, so, and they're doing a pilot too now. The question whether it'll actually become a series, we don't know until the pilot's made.
Right. Why this didn't get picked up is, series go to pilot all the time. There's tons and tons of pilots made every year. We never hear anything about, I would avoid reading anything too much into this, because of any number of reasons why they may have decided to pass on it. So, again, if this is anything else, any series by any other name, you wouldn't even know that this had happened.
Sure.
And they had at one point five different potential spinoff series in development.
Right. Like Brian Cogman, was one they rejected for some reason, which was probably
stupid. And Benioff and Weiss with the Star Wars thing, basically they got signed to do the next Star Wars trilogy and got given a shitload of money, and then they got hired by Netflix for a shit
bigger
ton,
shit ton of money.
For, yeah, massive shit ton of money to develop stuff for Netflix. And people are, I think, reading a lot into this. I'm going out on a limb and just saying this is most likely, A, probably neither employer is happy that they'd be splitting their attention given the shit ton and metric shit ton of money that they got. Number one. And number two, it's just, you know, they kind of have to do what's better for them, and having creator controlled content as opposed to Disney controlled content is probably better long term, lucrative long term, better for them. So I would really avoid reading way too much into that, other than they probably spread themselves too thin. And I don't think they were, they left, they were not fired. There is no evidence of bad blood. Some people are trying to read, oh, but, you know, the Kathleen Kennedy, who's currently in charge of the Star Wars films, there, people are taking her announcement, which was a fairly innocent, you know, and sterile kind of corporate, you know, they're welcome to come back, we look forward to what they're doing kind of thing. And people like are reading it deliberately with sarcastic intonations to show how she really was just sticking it to these guys. And these are, of course, the people who were just unhappy with the Game of Thrones ended and wishing that nothing but the world of pain be inflicted upon these two guys who are now making massive amounts of money. it's just so sad, the pettiness that kind of comes out with that.
Or entertaining.
Yeah. And we lost Phil again,
FYI.
Yeah, that's all right. Oh, and since you know Phil wants to talk about Apple TV, I'll point out that Disney TV is starting in about a week and a half, and that'll be the debut of the Mandalorian series, which most people, with one exception, Jan, on our Facebook page, really enjoy the trailer for. So we'll see how it goes.
Yeah, I'm not looking to sign up for any new streaming services yet. Definitely not before I get some sense of what people are thinking about the content.
For this, at the price, this was again at a cheap price, and I got like the bargain deal. You get buy 2 years, you get one year free.
Mm-hmm.
And I start with that, and still being a Star Wars nerd, I'm, you know, it was worth it to check out the new series and have access to all the other stuff that's there. And my wife does not want to cut the cord completely, but we have, certainly frayed the cord quite a bit, and got rid of most of the extra channels that we never watched anyway, but we had to have because my wife wanted to watch all the channels that we never watched.
Unfortunately, my cable company has me by the short hairs because I can still only get Red Zone through the cable company. Until that changes, I'm stuck.
And then, or you can give up football.
Eric, why don't you do a DirecTV or is it the Dish Network that allows you to have all the games at once?
Because I got to get my internet through Comcast anyway, so
gotcha.
Why bother?
Well, because then you can cut the cord.
Right.
I mean,
but not really.
Right. Well, I mean,
the funny thing is, when you cut the cord, you're not really cutting. Like, everybody's like, cut the cord, screw the cable company. You're still paying somebody for your internet access.
Right.
Right.
So you're not really hurting them all that much, even though you think you might be.
Well, right. I mean, it depends on how you pay for internet.
I got rid of $120 by cutting the cord.
Did you really?
Yeah, because
have you not paid some of that in subscription fees?
No, I was doing the subscription fees anyway.
Right.
You know, and Shudder. And so when I cut the cord, I cut 120, and I was already paying Shudder, you know, so it is really 120.
Right. Yeah. We cut the cord and lost a little over $100 in fees. And then the only thing we did was stick with HBO Now, and that's $15 a month. So that's still, you know, $85 or more a month that we're saving.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, I was already doing HBO through Apple because I'd rather give my money into Apple than Comcast because I hate Comcast. So I was doing that, plus I did Shudder through Apple, and I did, obviously, Prime, and then I did Netflix. So those are the four that I was doing even before I cut the cord. So
I've canceled my Hulu, and I've canceled my HBO Now for the time being. I still get Netflix, Prime, and Shudder.
Gotcha.
Let's see. All right. So any other information, Mike? Or is that about it?
I think that was about it.
All right. So
I've heard great word of mouth so far about Dr. Sleep, which is good to know.
Right. Right.
In the hyperbole department, it was not the scariest movie since The Exorcist, but it was called the best Stephen King adaptation since Shawshank Redemption.
But I don't know.
What are you talking about now?
Dr. Sleep.
Dr. Sleep.
I don't know if that's a good thing.
Oh, okay.
The book.
I thought you were talking about In the Tall Grass. I was like, what the fuck?
I actually don't know if that is a good thing, if it is, because the book was just okay or above average.
No, it is a good thing. They say that it's the best Stephen King film since Shawshank Redemption.
Well, I'll give it. No, that's not what they said. You said it was the best Stephen King adaptation.
It's a good thing. Phil, they didn't put it there as a. I think you're reading way too much into that statement.
It's
flat out hyperbole intended to set everybody up for massive disappointment.
Yes.
Gotcha. Oh, that's a good point. I see what you're saying. I'm like, excellent. Well played.
We are obviously probably going to cover Dr. Sleep, right?
I assume so. Is that next week or the week after?
That's
next week. It comes out on the 8th.
Yeah, okay, so that would be next week, yeah. All right, so we'll do that one probably, as well as the other genre films that are coming out. There's a lot of them coming. So, and as Eric mentioned, a good many now that are popping up on VOD that are actually pretty impressive. So let's give our final thoughts in a moment. But first, Eric, you do another podcast with your buddy Dan?
I do. It is a general interest podcast called the Scancity Podcast. That's spelled A-S-K-A-N-C-I-T-Y. You can find it wherever you found this one.
Mike, me, you, and Eric do this side podcast?
Yeah, that would be Cinema a la Carte. We have recorded 2 episodes and released none because they were all for us. And we'll be releasing a 3rd episode, or not, sometime in the future. It's going to be a monthly podcast focusing on films that are that perhaps in the past we might have covered on Dark Discussions, but maybe we're ill-fitting. But in the future, we'll give us a chance to focus on other stuff, other genres that are just dark and depressing in their own unique ways instead of the Dark Discussions way.
Or maybe not. Maybe we'll do a comedy.
Who knows? Yeah, I mean, I'm not a big fan of comedies, but there's some good ones. Phil
doesn't like enjoyment.
Well,
right.
Well,
Phil doesn't like comedies and yet has watched The Office obsessively for the last 6 months.
That's true.
He got you on that one, Phil.
That's true. I'm just concerned when you do comedies, a lot of times you just say, oh, that was a funny part. And, you never really talk.
Yeah, that's the problem with comedies, is finding comedies with depth.
Yeah, that is the problem with discussing comedies.
Yeah. Chrissy, I know you mentioned your new publication that you're starting next year, but you actually had a book released this year?
I did, yep. It's called The Shadows Behind. It is a short story collection that is dark, basically. So if you have read my work before or you like dark short stories, you can head over to Amazon and pick that up, or you can contact me and I can get you a copy, or you can go to your bookstore or wherever you get books and get it. It is also available for Kindle. And if you want to find out more about my life and my work, you can head on over to ChristyPetersonSchoonover.com.
And if people don't know how to spell ChristyPetersonSchoonover.com,
just make it up. Like, I'm the only person on.
Well, even better,
just
you can go to
give it a shot. You'll find it.
Even better, you can go to darkdiscussions.com. And on the right, there's a link directly to her website. Also,
thank
on that
you,
website.
Phil.
You're welcome, yes. And you can also find our email, which is darkdiscussions@aol.com. Please send us your emails. And the Facebook group, Dark Discussions Podcast Facebook group, where there's a lot of discussions of things right now. There's a lot of discussions of Game of Thrones and Star Wars because of the big news that just occurred this evening, or I should say this afternoon. And with that, we should probably give our final thoughts on this film. So, Mike, why don't you start?
The farts! Oh, God, the farts!
And that, Eggers is a talented man. I think this is a misfire. I didn't think he had the story there. I'll be there to see his next one. I will not ever watch this one again. I will not rent it. I will not buy it. I will not leave it on. If I come across it scanning through channels, I will find something else.
In a box.
Yeah, I will not with a fox. Yeah, some people might like it. Some people might really dig it. I'm not saying don't check it out. If you liked The Witch, certainly. If you liked similar sorts of pretentious art house kind of films, you know, you might want to give it a shot. You know,
Mother,
Braid. You know,
oh, yeah, that's a good one. Yeah, Braid.
You know, no, it wasn't, but that's okay. Sunchoke, also another one that's terrible.
Run away from Sunchoke. It sucked.
But if you liked those films as Phil did, you might like the Lighthouse. Except Phil didn't like it. So go fucking figure.
Who knows?
I like
Phil's an enigma.
So I'll go next because I'm the enigma. And it is. It's weird. So certain things just hit me really good. Like, for example, 47 Meters Down Part 2 is just a silly film. But for whatever reason, that hit me like a sledgehammer that it was so fun that I enjoyed it.
Objects.
That's true. But I just thought it was fun. This film here, oddly, like I said, I did like it better than The Witch. It's definitely not a film for a lot of folks, and it really didn't feel like it had that much of a point, except as a character study and as a homage to other artists in history. It's well acted, well directed, cinematography is great, sound design is probably the best part of the film. It's just incredible. And that's saying a lot because the acting was just fantastic too. But again, as some folks here said, that the story itself may be an issue. Even if the screenplay is solid, that the story is possibly an issue for a lot of people. So all in all, it's a mixed bag because of that. But again, I'm going to sound weird. It's still a great film, even though it's a mixed bag and really not for everybody. So if that makes any sense, but Mike kind of summed it up, like Sancho, Braid, all those films are, in my opinion, really solid. Midsummer is a great film. But again, all those films aren't for everybody either. And, that's the type of film of art house. It's hit or miss for people as for individuals rather than for a whole group. Let's go with you, Chrissy.
I have such mixed feelings about this film. I just think that if you're curious, if the trailer piqued your interest and you want to go see it because the trailer piqued your interest, then go see it. But be aware that there's really a lot to look for in this. And I think you kind of have to know certain things in order to be able to fully appreciate it. I think it could have been half the length and been actually much better. So you may want to wait and just pick this up if you're curious about it. Don't go see it in the theater. Maybe just rent it or wait till it comes on Netflix. I don't know. I can't really recommend this film. I just feel kind of like I'm with Mike. I'm never going to rent it. I'm never going to own it. I'm never going to – like it's – you know. And whereas I thought I loved The Witch, and I just really wish that Eggers had done something super cool with The Lighthouse that would have made me go, wow, and he just didn't. So that's my thoughts.
All right, Eric.
I think this was supreme acting and filmmaking skill applied to a story that wasn't very interesting to me personally. Mm-hmm. I'm probably not going to revisit this movie. I don't discourage others from enjoying this movie. If it's your thing, have fun. I probably won't be watching it again. But as Mike said, I'll probably go see his next film.
All right, very well. So this is Mr. Eggers' sophomore effort, getting excellent reviews by critics, mixed by your co-host here. I have no idea what the audience reviews are. I haven't checked them out, so I'm not really quite sure. But based off of what Chrissy heard in her screening, it sounds like they may be mixed as well. So fans of Patterson, especially his last 6 years of work in indie and and Cronenberg films and stuff will be delighted. Anybody who's a fan of William Dafoe will most certainly be delighted. And if you like sound, spooky sound, this film has it. But again, art house film is pretty much everybody here said. So still at theaters now. Not sure how long, because it is only one of those 1,500 screenings rather than the 3,500 screenings that most films are when they're released. But it is at least getting a wider release than getting a straight VOD. So with all that stated, I guess, Eric, why don't you lead us out?
All right. Thanks for tuning in and listening to us talk about The Lighthouse. Come back next week. We'll have another topic. The Fats! Oh, God, the Fats!
It's of a merchant's daughter brought up in Callao.
Hurrah, me yellow girl, who let me go?
She took me in the parlor and said, won't you be me beau?
Hurrah, me yellow girl, who let me go?
Oh,
do let me go, me girl, do let me go?
Oh, all around the sofa, lads, and wasn't it to go?
Hurrah, me yellow gal, who'd let me go?
And about the hour of 12 o'clock, her old man, he come home.
Hurrah, me yellow gal, who'd let me go?
Oh,
do let me go, me gal, do let me go? Hurrah, me yellow gal, who'd let me go?
As I was out a walking down by the riverside,
hurrah, me yellow gal, do let me go.
It was there I seen this pretty gal swimming in the tide,
hurrah, me yellow gal, do let me go.
Oh,
do let me go, me gal, do let me go. Hurrah, me yellow gal, do let me go.
As I was out a walking all in the bright moonlight,
hurrah, me yellow gal, do let me go.
It was there I seen the gal a swimming and her eyes they shone so bright,
hurrah, me yellow gal, do let me go.
Oh,
do let me go, me gal, do let me go. Hurrah, me yellow gal, do let me go.
I wish I was in Madame Gashie's down in Callao.
Hurrah, me yellow gal, do let me go.
Where the gals hold on your bobstay and they never let it go.
Hurrah, me yellow gal, do let me go.
Oh,
do let me go, me gal, do let me go. Hurrah, me yellow gal, do let me go.
We'll cast a line round other gushies and take the house in tow.
Hurrah, me yellow gal, do let me go.
We'll tow it back to Liverpool all the way from Callao.
Hurrah, me yellow gal, do let me go.
Oh,
do let me go, me gal, do let me go. Hurrah, me yellow gal, do let me go.
Oh,
do let me go, me gal.